He turned just 6 years old this summer, our neighbor's son, on the island off the coast of Maine where we spend our summers. I can see him now, a thoughtful imp of a boy. At six, he still wears lightly the bright exuberance of four and five, shows only faint signs of the impending awkwardness of 10, and is devoid of even a trace of 15's diffidence. Six. And I remember his first summer on the island, and how in the summers after that, he began coming round to our house in pursuit of garter snakes or grasshoppers or the feathery moths that were drawn to our porch light in the early evening. And how on hot afternoons this year, he would appear in just his shorts, barefoot and with the tender skin of his torso tight and almost transparent over the birdcage of ribs. And how in his guileless way, direct, he would ask for a cookie or something to drink, knowing what a soft touch I am, even a half an hour before dinner. The image that is coming to mind just now, though, has him in the stern of a friend's boat on the last day of summer, with his family's luggage piled around him as the boat pulls away from the island dock. Up, his hand shoots, a tentative wave to the 10 or so of us who have gathered on the dock to say goodbye. And over the engine's rising growl, his clear, thin, almost musical voice, calling back with equal parts of hope and expectation, "See you next year!" The boat is the size of a fist, of a thumbnail, of a speck, and it's gone. The passage of time, another summer slipping away, another year laid to rest in the short days after Christmas, fascinates most people in one way or another and can bring a touch of melancholy to many of us. My wife and I just attended a family reunion in Pasadena between Christmas and New Year's, and you could hear in the reactions of people to pictures from old dusty albums that were on display, "Can you believe how young we looked? Do you remember that day at the beach? That was 50 years ago." Oh, I wish I could talk to him one more time. If you're so inclined, you might find yourself making little forays into the metaphysics of time. Time, Rabbi Kushner says with characteristic wit, is God's way of making sure that everything doesn't happen at once. It's an image with a little playfulness in it and no small bit of wisdom as well. God, for whom only one moment exists, for whom the term chronology is an unnecessary word, knows that we human beings with our little minds can't take it all in simultaneously. And so God constructs this instrument called time, which gives the illusion of our stringing our experiences out, giving one after another some order so that we can digest and learn and grow and organize and enjoy. The physicists, Hawking and others, driven by holy curiosity, talk about it in a different way, taking us to the edge of what the human mind can do and tantalizing or terrorizing us with time-space continuums, curve time, relativity, and in the back of a Scientific American issue some time ago, the notion of parallel universes or a multiverse in which everything really does happen all at once. And it's a tantalizing thought, by the way, for me, that at least one of those universes, in one of those many universes, I have kept my hair and am looking back on a glorious career as a pro baseball player. Although I have to admit sheepishly here in this place that it would have had to have been for the Dodgers, the beloved team of my Southern California youth, I know. Shall I just leave now? I'm sorry. In any case, today, if in fact there is such a thing as today, It's the question of time and its more human proportions that concerns us. I'm referring to that unmistakable feeling that grows, of course, with age, that time is slipping away. My days are swifter than a weaver's shuttle, Job says. And there is no small measure of bitterness in his tone. My days are swifter than a weaver's shuttle, and they come to their end without hope. We may be a little more philosophical about it, not so bitter, but there is no mistaking that time is going by very fast. And no wonder that we feel it at particular times. The passage of another birthday, Tripp and Oak certainly can relate to this today, this being their birthday month, or the end of a summer, or the weeks around New Year's, 2016. 2016. Really? Really? I mentioned the feeling of melancholy that often accompanies this sense of time's quick passage. Even if our outlook isn't as dark as Job's, it's easy enough to let lament rather than laughter be our response to it all. Where did the year go? We ask. And there is a hint of sadness mixed with the incredulity, as though a bit of our own tears were laced into our wine of living. Where, this past year, where did it go? Where the children's growing? Where the simpler world that I remember? Where my life? We plunge our hands into time's rushing stream, but for every scoopful that we can bring to our mouths and drink, 1,000 times as much has glided by untasted. As I said, we may not be embittered by it like Job, but it's easy to feel sad about it all, perhaps even a little desperate, like the woman in Dorothy Parker's poem, A Lovely Leave. It's wartime, and her soldier has just been home on a brief furlough. Parker writes, 24 hours with him. After all, that is no short while, you know. That is, if you don't think of it as a thin little row of hours dropping off like beads from a broken string. She was so filled with the desperate consciousness of the hours sliding away. Only 12 more. Only 5 more. Oh, dear God, only one left. That she had no room for gaiety. For ease, she had spent the golden time grudging its going. Teach us to count our days, the psalmist sang. But surely we're not to count them as that young woman did, desperately clinging to them, grudging their going in such a way as to tarnish the gold that they are. Teach us to count our days, but that cannot mean that we are to add them up like chips at a poker game or dollars in a bank account, as though the value of a life is somehow related to the number of days we are given. We know better than that. Teach us to count our days so that we might gain wisdom of heart. Now, what's disconcerting about this psalm is that admonition to count our days, rather than coming as a gentle and undemanding advice, is said in the context of some kind of violent images about God's anger. You turn us back to dust and say, turn back, you mortals, for 1,000 years in your sight are like yesterday when it is gone, or like a watch in the night. You sweep them away, they're like a dream, like grass that is renewed in the morning. In the morning it flourishes and is renewed, in the evening it fades and withers. So that gentle image, that gentle lamb of an image, the 6-year-old boy leaving at the end of summer, harbors within it a raging lion of truth. That time is no warm breeze that wafts us along, but it is a maelstrom in which we are inexorably borne off. When one night a few summers ago, an early nor'easter swept our island, and even the boats in the safe harbor pitched about wildly and dangerously. That's an image of what time is doing with us. And that isn't all, because there is an element of personal failure and accountability involved as well. You have set before us our iniquities, our secret sins in the light of your countenance. And which of us, if the world has left us with any remnant of honesty, will not, when we see how swiftly time has passed, confess to some element of regret over things we have left undone, or things we have done which we might have resisted, the love left unexpressed until it was too late, the bit of bravery we might have found but didn't, so that the taste of "if only" is left in our mouths, the forgiveness withheld, the angry word loosed when it might have been sheathed, the continual triumphs of self-interest over justice and generosity. So when it comes to this question of time and the passage of time, the psalmist simply will not let us off with a sweet nostrum or reassurance. We are indeed being swept away. And what's more, we have not always used well the brief time that we have. And yet, and this is the "and yet" of faith, teach us to count our days. Count each one as an opportunity for redemption from our mistakes. Count each of these glorious days as a gift, a wildly prodigal gift from one who in the end chooses not to hold our failings against us. Job, notwithstanding, count each day as an occasion for hope. Hope which is not dewy-eyed optimism, but is the tough, incorrigible strength of our better natures. Count the days and put your arms around the paradoxical truth that it is precisely because our days are limited that they are able to bear such amazing joy. Next year the boy will be 7, and then 17, and then 70. And if it were not so, if we had not been given this terrible gift of time, then the precious pang of seeing him off on the last day of summer would be replaced with a dull and demeaning absence of change. And the genius of our days would devolve into pitiful sameness. Instead, we have this glorious ache, this blessed wound, time, so that with Edna St. Vincent Millay, we can know that we're alive. She wrote, "O world, I cannot hold thee close enough. Thy winds, thy wide gray skies, thy mists that roll and rise, thy woods this autumn day that ache and sag, and all cry with color, that giant crag to crush, to lift the lean of that black bluff. World, world, cannot hold thee close enough." So, finally, as we turn the page to another year, with the subtext of time's swift and furious passage pressing itself into consciousness, our calling is to count our days and so to gain hearts of wisdom. That wisdom teaches us that there are few joys quite so pungent as that which comes from the brave, even glad embrace of our mortality. And so I close with this entry from my journal in 1986 when our twin daughters were 9 years old. "Went looking for Halley's Comet after supper the other evening, an impromptu family ramble over Connecticut hills, seeking a high, dark spot from which to peer into the heavens. It was a playful hour with good spirits all round, and, to be honest, our astronomical curiosity was half-hearted at best. Once situated at a vantage point, we found it hard to concentrate on so distant a quarry. We saw several points of light in the southwest, any one of which might have been Halley's, but we couldn't be sure. And after a while, we decided to seek a tamer objective. We went for ice cream." As we piled out of the car and began to cross the parking lot into Friendly's, I felt Enid's hand slip into mine. This is our habit when there is traffic. I think we are both comforted by it. But on this night, I felt something more. Had one of those flashes of insight that careens across consciousness and momentarily gives light to the inner universe. Enid will be 84 years old when the comet comes again, I thought to myself. And I could see her, hair drawn back in a flurry of snow, shoulders slightly stooped, eyes still bright, still flashing. In my vision, she was on someone's porch. Will they still have porches in 2061? Waiting for Halley's, looking off over the horizon for a speck of light, an uncommon brilliance, an icy presence where on most nights there is darkness. Just then, in the parking lot at Friendly's, I found myself wondering, yearning to know if on that far distant night she would remember this one, remember the ride in the car, remember going for ice cream, remember holding my hand. I know, of course, that even in her later years, Enid will remember me. I was hoping for something more than that, that riding the tail of the comet, this particular moment might come round again, years hence, resurrected as it were, made eternal. Thinking of my daughter as an old, old woman makes me feel a kind of envy for the comet, which lopes around the solar system every 76 years as if it had all the time in the world. Our lives, by contrast, are over in a flash. We burst forth, sparkle, glimmer, grow dim, and are gone. In the cosmic scheme of things, flesh is practically as ephemeral and evanescent as vapor or gas. Only rocks and ice and dust and space endure. Still, and yet, I know that for the momentary gift of her hand in mine, for the frivolous pleasure of tasting ice cream, for this odd adventure on a warm evening, even if the moment isn't remembered when I am gone, I will gladly, willingly, joyfully embrace the limits of my life, its brevity, its fragility, its impermanence. It is rich, this life, rich like found treasure, and meant, I think, to be spent extravagantly and with exuberant gratitude to God. Amen.